Good evening, everybody. Would you like to identify yourself? We'll be starting in a minute or two, see if other people will arrive. Okay, let us get started. Anabekoa Gedula Chemincha Tatir Serupa Alapegimo Yutat Sadi. This verse connects us to the phrase Ahavatinam, unconditional love. And also, we have the letters of the month connected to this verse during the month of Shvat. The letters of Tzadi, that created the constellation Dali, the Aquarian, the water carrier, and the Bet, that created the planet Shabtai, the planet Saturn. Together, Tzadi and Bet have a gematria of 92, which connects us to the unity of the physical and the spiritual worlds. Kabel rinat amcha sagbeinu taharenu no Kupre Shayan at noon.
Hi.
The six letters spell the word Kra Satan, tear up Satan. And they can be rearranged to spell Shaar Katan, which means small gates, and reminds us to guard our gates, our eyes, ears, nose, and mouth. Na gibor dorche chudcha yevavat shamrem. Nun gimel dalet yud kaf shin. Nun gimel dalet has a gematria of 57, which is the Hebrew word zan, which means parnasah, sustenance. Yud Kaf Shin is a sequence that lets us take back the energy we've given to the negative system through our mistakes. Bachen Tacharen Rakame Sitkasa Tamid Gamle Betet Resh Tzadi Tav Kimmel. Asin kadosh zero tuha nael adata etufet tet nunayan. Yachid gea lamcha penei zok rei kidushata. Yud Gimel Lamed, Pei Zayin Kuf. This sequence helps to speed the spreading of the wisdom of Kabbalah during this, the sixth millennium, during this, our generation. Shavatenu Yisrael Ushmati Akatenu Yodea Talumot Shin Kufav Tzadi Yudah Shin and Kuf have a gematria of 400. 400 connects us to the aspect of completion and perfection. The last four letters have a gematria of 506 and connects us to the phrase Ahavatinam, unconditional love. And we learn from this that the path to completion is by injecting unconditional love in each step in our process. And the eighth verse we say in a whisper. I'm now going to read from the Zohar, from Parsha B'Shalach.
Hanu.
I'm reading from section 26, building the lower temple, verse 332, which is coming from the Reaya Mehemna, which is the faithful shepherd, which means it's being spoken directly by the energy of Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayhino amadunai Eloheinu aleinu maasei yadeinu kunanei aleinu maasei yadeinu kunaneihu. Tikru dam lemivnei makdusha letata kegavna devei makdusha dilela. Kada amachon l'shivtecha pe'alta Hashem t'itzterich l'mivnei be'mikdasha l'tata u'tzala'a b'gavei t'lecha b'koyocha l'miflach le'lekutcha t'richu deha. It is a commandment to build the lower temple similar to the temple of above, as it is written, in the place Hashem which you have made for you to dwell in. Because it is necessary to build a temple below, to say a prayer in it every day, and to serve the Holy One, blessed be He, because prayer is called service. First off, we know that the translation into English of the word mitzvah, to commandment, is not a correct translation. So the verse is saying that the lower temple needs to be built similar to the upper temple. The upper temple has all the same parts and components that we learn from the various prophets. When King Solomon built the first temple, and then when Nehemiah built the second temple, we have all of these descriptions of what the temple will look like. And we have a description of the third temple and how it will be built. And people don't read the prophets, but it's very clear. But the question is, why does it have to be built in the same way? Aren't the needs of the lower world different than the needs of the upper world? And the answer is no. The lower world is a mirror for the upper world. And it's something we really do need to learn. That the way the world works down here is incorrect. It's a corruption. The way the worlds work in the higher worlds is what we are to be striving for. So when we're raised with the study of logic and use your head, it's not the way the upper worlds work.
They work with their connection to the Creator, to their intuition. Yes, they use logic, but only to affirm their intuition. We don't, most of us don't even use the concept of intuition. Does anybody have any questions? I'm getting a lot of static, so I'm going to be changing the code after if anybody has some questions.
How you doing, Hanok?
I'm doing well, Richard. It's good to hear from you.
Thank you, my friend. I knew you was going to start at 8 o'clock. I was kind of confused here. I was going to call you, but I'm glad I got you.
Do you have any questions for me, Richard, right now?
Yeah, I'm getting static.
Yeah, I'm gonna change the code so that you'll have to press star 6 to ask a question.
All right.
You shouldn't be getting any static now because wherever it's coming from is being muted at your phones. But in order to ask a question, which I would like you to be able to do, you need to press star 6, and that will allow you to be heard. So does anybody have any questions before we start the class? Okay, tonight is the third class in our advanced reincarnation, where we're reading from an English translation that's published on the Kabbalah Online website. The English translation was, the book itself is Rabbi Chaim Vital, the student of the Ari, having written down what his teacher taught him about reincarnation. And his son, Rabbi Shmuel Vital, also made comments and changes to the book in the original Hebrew language. Then there was a gentleman who lived in Jerusalem who started to translate this book, and Kabbalah Online was authorizing the translation and using it as a weekly release. But unfortunately, while he was doing this, he passed away, and his name was Rabbi Teicher. So they, Kabbalah Online, after an appropriate amount of time of searching, found another scholar to translate the book. And because we're talking about scholars, their orientation is not from the standpoint of utilizing the mechanisms. It's from the standpoint of a scholar. It's from the standpoint of the academics. And so as we go through, I read in the bold is the original translation of the Hebrew. And what's not in the bold is the commentary that Rabbi Teicher at this point, and then later on the other rabbi, was making or will be making. And then I will make my own commentary. Sometimes I will have the time to add to that, and so you'll see it where I will specify it's my commentary. And sometimes it will be on the recording, as it will be tonight. Now, the web page that I'll be reading from and following along with, you're welcome to follow along with if you have access to a computer. It's available at www.yeshem.com/Kabbalah Advanced Reincarnation1.htm. Now I'm going to read and spell each word and be clear, so get out your pencils and paper. www.yeshem.com
YESHSHEM.com / Kabbalah, KABBALAH, - Advanced, ADVANCED, - Reincarnation, REINCARNATION, - the number 1.htm. Then you need to scroll down approximately halfway, and you'll see it where it says Chapter 1, Part 3. Since they were releasing this material in weekly sections, they broke it into various parts because the full Chapter 1 is too much material to be absorbed by newcomers, too much material to be absorbed easily. And so they broke it into parts. We are talking about Part 3, and if we have time tonight, we'll do Part 4, but we'll see. The last few weeks, we've only been able to do one part each week. To give you a quick summary, we've spoken about the five levels of souls. The nefesh being the lowest, the ruach next above it, the neshama above that, the chaya above that, and the yechidah at the highest level. We've spoken about the corollary relationship between the levels of souls and the worlds, and the sephirot, and the tetragrammaton metaphor, and the spelling out of the tetragrammaton, and the gematrias associated with those different levels of consciousness. And last week, we went extensively into the relationships involved. What is the difference between a world and a partsuf and a sephirot and a soul? Because we can't truly understand the concept of the names of the souls if we don't know their roots. Where do they come from? What is their source? What is their purpose? And we're also talking about relative terms. Because I can be talking about the world of Atzilut, but I can be talking about Malchut in the world of Atzilut. Well, Malchut in the world of Atzilut, Malchut is a Sephirot that does not have any light. But if I'm talking about a world, I'm talking about the light and the world, the light and the Sephirot being in unity. Not necessarily unity, but being fulfilling each other. So if I were to say Malchut of the world of Atzilut, I'm talking about the highest world. I'm talking about the highest light fulfilling that world. But I haven't specified that. It might be the lowest light that is fulfilling the Sephirot of Keter. And since it's the lowest light, Keter is really not fulfilled properly. And that's why it needs to be corrected. But now I'm talking about Malchut of the world of Atzilut. So, and I'm saying Malchut does not yet have any light. So I have described a point where some light has come into the world of Atzilut. And it has gone into the Keter, but I don't know how far it has come down. I don't know if it went to Chokhmah and stopped, if it went to Bina and stopped. What I do know is it didn't go into Malchut yet. these relationships that I'm describing, that I described last week, in order for you to continue in your study of Kabbalah, these terms need to be second nature to you. You need to know them like the back of your hand. What are they really talking about? Because when you read books of Kabbalah, many of these sages don't explain this. They just talk about it. And they expect you to know what they're talking about. But what's really happening is every time you truly learn this material, you're breaking a klipa. You're freeing sparks of light that you are needing to complete and free in order to achieve your correction, your tikkun. Does anybody have any questions before I begin the class tonight? What I've set up to now is just a review. Okay. Chapter 1, part 3. Yeah, I can hear you.
Where do you get vocabulary? Where do you get the vocabulary words from?
You get them in the same structure of web pages.
From who?
In our first class, Richard. Our first class was at www.yeshem.com/ Kabbalah Advanced Reincarnation without the number one.
.htm.
Okay. You go there, you'll see all of these, the vocabulary explained, but you will need my commentary, and that's why you need to get access to the recordings that I send out. And I know I'm sending them to you, but I don't know that if you have access to download them and put them on a DVD or a CD that you can listen to at your leisure. But if you truly want to study this material, you'll find it. Because without the technology, there's no way to truly get this, because these books are not available in English. They're only available in the Hebrew, except some of them have been translated. But most of the translations are not accurate. They're corrupted.
Okay, I'll get to it, Hanuk.
I know. I'll find a way to get them. I'm teaching people how to make the most of this material.
All right.
Chapter 1, part 3.
Okay, excuse me.
Barbara?
I was a little bit late in coming in. What was the reference for the Zohar reading?
The reference was to Beshalach, chapter 20, section 26, the first verse. I don't remember the number of the verse.
Okay, I got that. Verse 332, but the chapter. Did you also do the Anah B'Koach?
Yes, I did.
Okay, well then I missed that. Okay, I'm okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You didn't miss it. And this is something for everybody to realize. If you come into a class late, the energy of the Anah B'Koach, which I always start with, and the energy of the Zohar, which I also follow the Anah B'Koach with, is always that energy is coming into the section, into this communication. So when you enter it, you're being presented and connected to that energy, even if you didn't participate in the saying and hearing of those things.
Okay.
And those of you who've asked questions, please press again *6. That will stop the scratches and the static.
All right. Thank you. *6.
*6. When you press *6, you mute your home phone, and you won't be able to be heard. but it also stops any of the background noises that are generated by your particular phone. So the path of rectification. Even though, as is known, there are people whose nefesh is from Malchus of Asiya, and others who are from Yesod of Asiya, still every person must rectify the entire spectrum of Asiya. Only then can a person receive his Ruach from Yetzirah, since Yetzirah is greater than all of Asiya. I'm reading the commentary now. Not all souls are rooted at the same level. However, in spite of the level of the root of one soul, a person is still responsible to rectify all strata within the level of the world to which he is connected. This includes those levels within the same world, but below his root, as well as those above it. No individual can begin to rectify the next level of soul applicable to the next world until he has rectified all the lower levels of the world in which he is rooted. Thus he can initiate work. I'm sorry, but my computer jumps around.
Yes, and I'm still getting a lot of static.
Please, all of you. Thank you. Barbara, have you pressed *6 again?
Okay.
Every time you speak, you have to say it. You press *6 to be heard. And then you have to say it again to stop the static. So again, I'm sorry. Let me get back to where I was. Thus, he can initiate work on Ruach from Yetzirah only after his nefesh from Asiya is completely rectified. And then there's a commentary that says, one must be involved with the study of Torah and the performance of mitzvot that correspond to all of Asiya. Let's disregard this final section. We'll come to a later understanding of it. But this is my commentary, and you need to kind of understand this. First off, this is being written as if the level of soul in a person is one complete unit. So Hanoch has a level of soul called a nefesh. That's a total falsity. Hanoch has 613 levels of soul called nefesh, because he has 613 parts of his body, and each part of his body has its own nefesh. And why is that? And we'll discuss this more later on in the book in a few weeks. But the reason behind it is very simply. Adam had 613 parts of his body and soul, and each one of us were participating in Adam, being part of Adam's soul. And if we came from his legs, then our correction in, or our participation in the sin of Adam, was to walk up to the tree. If our level of soul was in his mouth, our participation in the sin was more severe because we involved in inhaling or in chewing or in bringing that energy into our mouth and into the body. And if
our level of soul was coming from the hand. The level of participation wasn't walking up to the tree. It was picking the fruit. So each of us has some level of participation in the sin of Adam. And that participation dictated our first incarnation. And now that we're 5,000 years later, our level of participation has been adjusted and corrupted by our own actions in all of the incarnations we've been. So that in my body, the nephesh of my legs may not at all be involved with the nephesh of the legs of Adam. They could just be there for the purposes of correcting something having to do with walking or running or movement. And that applies to all the different levels. So we need to understand that as we're reading this or speaking about this, it appears as if we're talking about one unified whole on the level of nephesh, and that's not true. But we are talking about a level of nephesh associated with a particular part of our body. And it's a generic term when we say the level of nephesh is connecting to the world of Asiya. Now, the world of Asiya is the world of action. It is the lowest world. It's connected to the Malchut. But the level of soul of the particular part of my body that I'm speaking about could be that the root of that soul could be from the Keter of Asiya. But the rule that's being explained here is even though my level is at Keter, I have to correct the five levels. The nefesh, the ruach, the neshama, the chaya, the yechida of Asiya. This is the reality. And this is why we need to have these terms just like the back of our hand, so we understand what and where we are talking about. But what this verse in the book is saying is in order to get a ruach in that part of the body, we have to correct all five levels of nefesh. Even if our root of our nefesh is at a higher level than the lowest level, we still have to go down to the lowest level and make all of those corrections. Does anybody have any question? Okay, I'm continuing to read. This is again from the book Shari Gilgulim. Similarly, in order to attain... Yes?
Okay, I had a question. If this is very difficult to understand right now, does that mean I'm not ready for this?
No, it doesn't mean you're not ready for it. It means that you're getting not all of the energy. The purpose of this study is not to use it in your life, in essence. That's not really a true statement. The purpose of this study is when you are completely understanding it, you'll be able to use it in your life.
Mm-hmm.
But until then, what you're doing is revealing light. The study of Kabbalah reveals light. What is the purpose of that revelation of light? Is it creates light for the world. It adds light to the world. It
It brightens up the room of the world. So,
okay, because excuse me.
You're not getting all of the information, all of the understanding. But there's two ways of looking at that. Number one, you're not getting all of the understanding, but you're getting whatever it is you're capable of understanding at this moment.
Mm-hmm. Normally, I'm able to take notes.
A week from now, it'll come back to you and it'll make sense to you. A little more sense. But that's also why the publisher, Kabbalah Online, and all of the sages write, you study this material over and over.
Well, normally I'm able to take notes, even though they're scribbly. When the class is over, I go back over and sort of fill in. But I'm not even able to take notes. I get one or two words and, but I'll continue. That's okay. Thank you. I'm going to do *6 again to disconnect you. Okay.
Thank you. Just one final comment on that for all of you. The taking of the notes is appropriate. But understand, the taking of the notes is an intellectual exercise. The real information comes through your intuition. We have two levels of mind, according to the psychology. We have the conscious and the unconscious. The unconscious is a higher level. The unconscious is dealing with emotions. The conscious in the Western world doesn't really deal with emotions. It runs away from emotions. It deals with logic. It deals with understanding. But the real depth of ourselves is in our unconscious. And that's dealing with emotions. And no amount of notes is going to bring you that information. What it will do is build a vessel for the unconscious to somehow show up in your mind. When you need the information, for whatever reason, an aspect of your life, a correction in your life, a question that somebody might ask you, when you need the information, it will show up in your mind, and you'll be able to answer the question. You'll be able to know what is the right thing to do. That is when your unconscious is working properly. And your unconscious works properly when you are doing actions that are righteous, which gets back to the sentence I said we weren't going to talk about, and that is to study and do mitzvot. Continuing to read. Every time my computer jumps around, but I'm getting there. Similarly, in order to attain his neshama from Beriah, a person needs to rectify every part of his ruach in all of Yetzirah, after which he can then receive his neshama from Beriah. It is insufficient for him to rectify only the particular place in which his soul root is grounded. Commentary. That is the level in which his nefesh is rooted. That's the definition of a soul root. What level is the nefesh at? And to make things confusing, the nefesh being rooted at the level of Tiferet, so to speak, at the level of Ruach, can grow to the level of the Neshama. So the root of each soul can grow. It isn't a static thing. But we'll discuss that and find out about that in future classes. I'm continuing to read from Rabbi Chaim. Rather, he must rectify all parts of each level, as we have mentioned, until he is fit to receive the nefesh of all of Asiya, and then he can attain his Ruach of Yetzirah. It is in this way with all the worlds. The import of this, the rectification, the tikkun, what we've just mentioned, is that one must be involved with the study of Torah and the performance of mitzvot that correspond to all of Asiya, not just those which correspond to the specific place to which his nefesh is connected. Here's a commentary. The 613 mitzvot correspond to the various limbs and tendons that make up a human being, whose shape represents the structure of the sefirot in the spiritual realm. In the sense that partsuf refers to the entire human form, each partsuf consists of 613 limbs and tendons. Thus, the performance of specific mitzvot brings rectification to the corresponding parts of the human body and to the corresponding section of the partsufim and the sefirot. The Talmud has already taught that there are mitzvot that have special significance for specific people. That is to say, one mitzvah is important for a particular person, and another mitzvah is significant for a second person. Nevertheless, in order to advance spiritually, each individual must perform all the mitzvot that he can and not content himself with the performance of only those mitzvot that are significant to him. Rabbi Chaim continues for the last part of Section 3. The above-mentioned rectification is thus also applicable in the realm of upholding Torah and mitzvot. This kind of seems difficult and overwhelming and confusing. So let's just put it in a simple form. We're dealing with one level of nefesh. That level of nefesh comes from the level of ruach of nefesh. And when it comes into this world, into this body, it has a tikkun to make. It has something to do. But it also has other aspects that it needs to correct other than this one level called ruach. So it has to start at the nefesh. And what part of the body does it belong to hasn't been described. So it doesn't know which of the 613 mitzvot it needs to do in order to correct this particular part of the body of himself. This is the understanding that we need to have clear. And that's why the sages teach us do all the mitzvot, study all the mitzvot. Now, we live in a generation that is far from the temple, far from the destruction of the temple 2,000 years ago. And there are mitzvot that I can only do in the temple. I cannot bring an animal sacrifice for peace except when the temple is in existence. I cannot burn incense. I'm not a Kohen. These are different aspects of the mitzvot. I can't do certain mitzvot that can only be done in the land of Israel, which is anything done in the land of Israel is dealing with the level of Asiyah. Understanding this aspect and trying to relate the mitzvah to a particular world, we don't know what level our soul is at. So the more mitzvot we do, the more we are able to strengthen a given level of a soul, as well as correct by doing a certain mitzvah. So if we did all of the mitzvot, we'd correct all of the parts of the levels of a soul. And that's literally what's doing. Does doing a mitzvah correct the soul? Essentially, yes, it does. But you have to do the mitzvah completely, accurately, perfectly. And everybody throws up their hands and says, well, I'll never achieve that. But the truth is, you will. Because just as I said earlier, your unconscious is going to feed you the information to your conscious that you need to do your actions. Your unconscious is going to feed you the information so that you do the mitzvah perfectly. And that can happen just by virtue of your spiritual growth. And your spiritual growth comes from revealing light, from doing things for the sole purpose of giving pleasure to the Creator. That elevates your soul root. It elevates the different levels of your soul root in all the different parts of your body. And it helps you clean what needs to be clean in order for you to do the action accurately and perfectly. You may have heard me from time to time in my Zohar classes, I explain that when I read a verse in the Zohar, and I make a mistake in the vowel, in the reading, and the way I pronounce the word, that I then go back and correct that. That is achieving a correction, a tikkun. It seems like a simple action, doesn't it? It's not difficult to go back and redo the word. Of course, for someone who has an ego, to admit to the world that you made a mistake can be difficult. But let's assume you realize you made the mistake and you go back and you say the word properly. That word is connected to a part of your body that's connected to a level of soul, and you are actually making the correction. The reason you mispronounced the word is because the correction, the blockage existed. When you go back and pronounce it properly, it's an indication that you made that correction. You broke through the negativity and did it perfectly. Before I go on to part four, does anybody have any questions? Okay, acquiring soul levels. Rabbi Chaim Vital says it is not sufficient to only rectify the particular spot to which his soul is connected. The commentary says, part of the last paragraph of the previous section has been repeated And the paragraphs of this section are numbered in order to facilitate explanation of this section. That's an announcement that it's going to be a little confusing, so we'll take it slowly. Number one, it is not sufficient to only rectify the particular spot to which his soul is connected. Rather, he must rectify all aspects of each level, as we have mentioned, until he merits all of the world of Asiya, at which time he can achieve his Ruach of Yetzirah. It is this way with all of the worlds. That's why when you look at someone, you don't know where their soul level is. Because he might have 612 parts of his neshama, of his nefesh, all corrected. And somebody else may only have two or three parts of their nefesh corrected. But in the physical world, they're both correcting as much as they can. But when all of the parts of the lowest level are corrected and perfected, he is given a different, higher level of soul called the Ruach. Number two, this means that one must be involved with the study of Torah and the doing of the mitzvot. Likewise, if a person sins and blemishes a particular spot in Asiya, even though it is not the place to which his nefesh is connected, he must rectify it. Let's say that somebody is in a lifetime where he was not a nice person, and he visited houses of ill repute, and he participated with prostitutes. And those actions made a covering over that part of his body. Now in this new lifetime, he would never go near a house of prostitution. But he still must correct the actions from his previous lifetime. Now how does he do that? Maybe by helping stop the sex trade, the sex slave trade, or different other aspects where he is doing actions that help elevate and reveal the light in this world. I'm now reading the commentary of Rabbi Teicher. If he commits a sin that affects a part of Asiya to which his soul is not particularly connected, he is responsible to rectify the blemish. Even though a person's nefesh comes from a specific place in the world of Asiya, he is still responsible to acquire every level of Asiya, the nefesh, the ruach, the neshama, the chaya, and the yichida of Asiya, as we learned at the end of the previous section. Likewise, if he commits a sin that affects a part of Asiya to which his soul is not particularly connected, he is responsible to rectify the blemish, since he is expected to acquire that level as well on his way to attaining the Ruach of Yetzirah. I think we've said that pretty frequently. And the reason that I'm repeating things, the reason that Rabbi Chaim repeated things, is this is the way you break klipa. You keep hitting stones until they break apart. and talking about the same subject, using the same words over and over, is how you break the stones, how you break the klipot, the shells that make it so difficult to reveal the light. Section 3. However, if another nefesh failed to perform a specific mitzvah from the world of Asiya, or sinned and blemished something in the world of Asiya, this does not obligate him to rectify the missing mitzvah or the blemish caused by the sin of the other nefesh. If they are both from the same place, however, then this is not the case, as we will explain later on with God's help. The commentary, though this will be explained in a later chapter, it can be said here briefly that there are times when more than one soul occupies a single body. If the souls originate from the same root, then they share a common responsibility and need for tikkun. However, if they do not come from the same root, then the deficiency or sin of one nefesh does not necessitate the other to be part of the rectification process. Again, this sounded a little complicated, but it really isn't. If your soul root comes from the left heel of Adam, and you have corrected that soul root of Adam through your previous lifetime, and another soul root connected to Adam, who is your soul brother, has done an action that veils that soul root, even though you corrected it last lifetime, you have the responsibility to fix that, to correct it in this lifetime. But if the soul root from the right heel of Adam makes the mistake, you don't have that responsibility. It's not your responsibility to correct other parts of the body of Adam, only the soul root part that you come from. But there are a lot of other soul roots in this generation. And each of those soul roots has parts of the Adam's body to correct. Section 4. Alternatively, it is possible that the concept of tikkun, of rectification, applies only to blemishes resulting from sin and not from the lack of performance of any of the 248 positive commandments. Thus, rectification is only necessary in the case of a sin and not for positive commands that were not performed as first proposed. If you'll remember back in the first class, we spoke briefly about the idea that if you had to do all of the positive commandments, you have to bake challah if you're a woman. You have to lay tefillin every day of your life if you're a man. Well, guess what? I haven't laid tefillin every day of my life. And every day I don't lay tefillin, what this section is saying is those days where I didn't lay tefillin, I do not have to make correction for those days that I missed. So then the question becomes, why should I lay tefillin at all? And that gets into the idea of revealing light. Section 5. Or the following is possible, and it is the correct interpretation. Let us say that a soul is from the malchut of the nukva of Asiya, called the nefesh of Asiya. He does not have to rectify the sections that are not connected to the root of his soul. If you take, this is commentary now, if you take the 10 sephirot called malchut and subdivide it into 10 sephirot, it becomes a partsuf called asiyah. The 10th sephirot of this subset of 10 sephirot is also called malchut, and more specifically, the malchut of asiyah. If this malchut is in turn subdivided into its own set of 10 sephirot, its 10th sephirot will be the malchut of the asiyah, or the malchut of the nukva of asiyah. Thus, the soul in question would be a level within the subset of the 10th sephirot malchut within the general structure of the 10th sephirot. He will have to rectify all of the malchuyots, all of the malchuts of Ruach and Neshama and Chaya and Yechida of Asiyah. But he won't have to correct those parts dealing with other body parts where his soul root does not originate. A person has to rectify his five roots in the five partsufim of Asiyah, but he does not have to rectify the sections that are not connected to the root of his soul. Since his root is specifically in Malchut, it is relevant to the Malchut on all levels in each partsuf. Someone who only rectifies the Malchut of Asiyah only acquires the Nefesh of the Nefesh that is within Asiyah. If the root of his soul is in Malchut, then he has to rectify the Malchut of Asiyah in order to acquire the Nefesh of Nefesh. A person who also rectifies the Zeranpin of Asiyah acquires both the Nefesh and the Ruach from Asiyah. Since his soul is from the Malchut, then he must rectify the Malchut of the Zeranpin of Asiyah in order to acquire the Ruach of Asiyah as well as the Nefesh. It is also rectifies the Ima of Asiyah that he attains the Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama from Asiyah. It is the same until he rectifies all five partsufim of Asiyah, in which case he will have acquired all of the Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Chaya, and Yechida, the Ranchi. This will be discussed again in Chapter 11. As confusing as these terms are, what it's really saying is, do the actions that the Torah tells you to do, and you make correction. And as you make correction, you elevate your consciousness of your soul root. And as you move up the ladder, there's a total of 125 steps. The five of the lowest level, Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Chaya, and Yechida, of Asiyah. And then there is another level of Asiyah having to do with the Partsuf. So it's 5 times 5 times 5, or 125 basic levels for each soul root to make correction. It sounds daunting. It sounds impossible. But it's not. Because you don't have to do all of it, just your share. Does anybody have any questions? I'm going to change the controls so you can speak out directly. If you're still trying to speak and not hearing me, press star 6 again so you'll be able to unmute your phone.
Any questions? I'm sorry if the subject matter is a little complex, but this is an advanced class, and those people who are getting less than their comfort level of understanding, eventually you will get it. It's not something you need to concern yourself that you're not getting it. You get what you're capable of holding, of you're capable of receiving. Everybody is not perfect yet. If you have a desire to receive more, then you may have to struggle more. You may have to work more. You may have to study additional amounts. But it's always free choice. Any questions? Just to make the announcements for the next classes, there's a class this Thursday night at 10 p.m. That is about Tu B'Shvat, which is this Saturday. This Saturday we will be doing a service for some ill students. By those people who wish to join and participate in that service, they will find that they're helping people connect to the energy and helping them heal. So in my opinion, there's not a problem with doing that and turning on some electricity on Shabbat. At 10 p.m. Saturday night will be a Zohar class. For those of you who wish to do a spiritual action, the first opportunity you have in the week, that's what Saturday night's class is about. Studying the Zohar is very beneficial as a first spiritual action of the week. Sunday morning at 10 a.m., we will be studying the science and Torah classes. It will be the first one of our series. Monday night, we're going to be doing a basic class on Teshuvah. That's at 7:15 p.m. And Tuesday night, again next week, we will be meeting and talking about the Shaarei Gilgulim, and moving on to Section 5 and possibly Section 6. Any questions before I hang up? And wish you all have a beautiful week. And just take it slowly, one step at a time. Don't try and absorb what is a lifetime study in a week and a half. Remember, this is a lifetime study, and it's meant to be taken slowly, carefully, step by step. Everybody have a beautiful week.
You too. Thank you.